Log Talk Radio.
Ain't got a dime to my name. What a terrible shame. Ho, hum. Ho, ho, hum. Just found a hole in my shoe when my stocking shows through. Ho, hum. Ho, ho, hum. I know that when you're as free as a bird in a tree, life is a wonderful whim. Look at the crank with his dough in the bank. Don't you feel sorry for him? Rolling along at a loss, never gathering moss. Ho, hum, ho, 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 hum. Ho, hum, ho, ho, hum. I'm no terrific success, I ought to worry, I guess. Ho, hum, ho, ho, hum. I like a shady old tree, what's the matter with me? Ho, hum, ho, ho, hum. There's nothing quite as grotesque as a man at a desk, looking outside at the sun. Shirts made of silk and a diet of milk. Maybe he thinks he has fun. I've got the vagabond itch. I guess I'll never get rich. Ho, hum. Ho, 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 ho. Ho, 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 ho.
Ho hum indeed. James Bostic here, Conservative Perspective on the Patriot Nation Radio Network here at Blog Talk Radio. We do this live twice a week, Tuesdays, Thursdays, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. On Thursdays, we're only on for an hour because we're back-to-back with the handsome one, El Guapo, Mark Hoffman, and Patriot Nation Radio Live. We have a recorded version of the program as well that goes out on the Mojo 50 Radio Network, mojo50.com. If you aren't listening, you should be, because just like Patriot Nation Radio, it is some of the very best in conservative and libertarian talk radio. mojo50.com. Well, what the hell, man? It's a marshmallow world out there here in the Mountain State. A little bit of a snow squall came through over the last couple of days, dropped about probably about 6 inches around through the neighborhood, a lot more in other places, but it's a marshmallow world, and I was happy to see it. One of the things that kills me about people where I live in West Virginia, and I've lived here almost 60 years. Every single solitary winter of those almost 60 years, it has gotten cold and it has snowed. And sometimes it snows butthole deep. I mean, it snows, okay? And these folks that have lived here just as long, if not longer than I have, are always shocked and appalled to discover that sometime around the middle end of December, it really gets cold and it starts snowing. But it's never bothered me. I take delight in all of the seasons that this beautiful state avails us, and it's terrific to live here. Excuse me. Well, last week, a couple of different things happened, and the first one we're going to talk about has to do, bless her heart, with the Vice President, Kamala Harris. She really, it was the first one, apparently, that she'd been given since she became president, vice president, rather. I sound like Joe Biden. Guy on NBC, maybe it was one of the NBC affiliates. Let's see, dang on. Who was that guy? Well, it was a terrible interview. And the reason it was a terrible interview is because she's just not good at them. And, you know, she's a lightweight, basically. I mean, I don't know what else to say. She is she's a lightweight on this stuff. And this is just in the last year, okay? You know how we do the Biden things? And you've heard some of the stuff that Biden has said. Well, okay, you get the idea.
We have the power today to have an impact on tomorrow, and we can't shortchange the significance of that.
Should we have done that sooner?
We are doing it.
But should we have done it sooner?
We are doing it. Here's the motivation. You. Figure out what kind of gives you, you know, your brain like a tingle.
I mean, the thing about Doug is that he is exactly who he is.
You want to figure out how to get across town to some restaurant you heard is great, you usually do Google.
We've been to the border.
You haven't been to the border.
I haven't been to Europe. It's actually stronger to be kind than it is to be mean. And that's a winning argument every time.
It was a debate. That the whole reason, literally, it was a debate. It was called a debate.
We must together. Work together.
It is time for us to do what we have been doing, and that time is every day.
It's so fundamental.
We do things that are about saying that our Department of Justice is going to do these investigations.
We dream with ambition. Have big dreams.
You'll remember that?
Yes.
All right. I feel it.
Yeah. Now, to refresh your memory, Kamala Harris, whose pearls of wisdom we just heard, started out life as Willie Brown's chew toy. And what am I saying here? Well, when she was young and looking better, she became the mistress of an older, powerful man. And through that older, powerful man, she became an attorney general. And then she became a senator. Because in California, the Democrat fix is in. However, there is no way to recover national political standing once a politician becomes a popular butt of jokes, a punchline. Case in point, Dan Quayle. Dan Quayle has disappeared from the scene so completely, nobody's even gotten him on the record about Kamala Harris's vice presidency. My guess, he's probably enjoying some bitter laughter. Little aside, Dan Quayle as vice president under George H.W. Bush, is a really good golfer, like a lot of those guys. And two different times during the H.W. Bush administration, Dan Quayle made holes in one. We never heard about it because he didn't want it going out. and he never really got to enjoy them because he knew as soon as – because they hated that guy. And you want to talk about somebody that got raked over the coals. Oh, poor Danny. He said, no. He said, you know, they'll never let me rest on this. They'll never give me a mess piece. I think this is all that I ever do. And he couldn't even enjoy it because he had made some misstatements, but the press didn't like the guy anyway. And, you know, they were out to get a Republican, and that's what he was. So there you go. But last Thursday, Craig Melvin at NBC did this interview, and it was, you heard the last statement there. She said, it's time for us to do what we've been doing, and that time is every day. What's happening with poor old Kamala? And it had to happen, okay? It had to happen. As, like I said, she started out as Willie Brown's chew toy. And, you know, she boffed her way to the Attorney General's office. And then from there, she parlayed that into the state Senate, or the United States Senate. And now into, she got less than 1% of her home state. California primary, she got less than 1%. No, wait a minute, she didn't even make it to the primary. She didn't even make it to the primary. In popularity polls, she was polling at less than 1% in her home state. Didn't even make it to the first primary. Swalwell didn't make it to the first primary. There were about three or four of them. Kamala and Swalwell were in there. And she's just a dim bulb. She's one heartbeat away from the presidency. There's no joke about that. But she really is. Well, you heard that stuff, okay? Now, here's the thing. And this is where it gets weird, okay? Two things we can look at. After this last week, number one, Kamala Harris is now officially a joke. She's just not real, and there's no sense in taking her seriously on anything. Number two, the entire Brandon administration is now basically a lame duck presidency after only 1 year, after his first year in office. He's a lame duck. They're not going to get any of the legislation that they want passed through. It's never going to happen. If it doesn't happen now, it's not going to happen because in 2024 – there, or 2022 rather, this year in the midterm elections, 26 Democrats in the House and Senate have said, I think it's about time for me to spend a little more time with the family, a little more time fishing, a little more time in the hometown, so I'm not going to be seeking reelection. 26. Now, will every one of those 26 seats in the House and Senate flip? No. No, they'll get a Democrat in there, and the machine will make it work somehow. But not all of them. Not all of them. So it's over. And we've talked a lot about, you know, what do they get rid of Kamala? Do they get rid of Joe? If they get rid of Joe, you know, if they get rid of Joe and Kamala steps up, I guarantee you she will do, believe me, whatever they tell her to do. The only problem is she smart enough to follow instructions? They may run into the same problem with her that they're running into with Joe Biden, but Joe isn't going anywhere. And even if he wanted to, Dr. Jill isn't going to let him. And Kama Sutra is not going anywhere either. And even if Kamala Harris could be pushed out, that would leave in the Senate, if there were ties, a 50-50 Senate. And no incentive whatsoever for the GOP to confirm another vice president. Because if they do, in this case, if there's a 50-50 tie, the vice president, as president pro tem of the Senate, gets to cast the tie-breaking vote. So you know what that means. Well, with a Democrat in office and an absent vice president, it's going to be tough to get one through if they don't confirm them. But she's not going to go anywhere right now. And Joe's not going to go anywhere until it just gets to the point that it's just so blatantly obvious that he's out there drooling. Then maybe they'll do something. So Joe's not going anywhere unless, like I said, it just gets so bad. And it conceivably could. Again, yeah, I thought he would be finished last summer, but he made it through, and he's still going at her. Fewer press conferences than any president in history. And you know why that is. They can't control them. Even the most structured and restrictive of press conferences, man, they run a terrible risk of Joe going off the rails. And they can't afford that. I mean, everybody's know. I mean, it's like an open secret now, and everybody knows it, but they can't afford it. Excuse me. The only thing I think that we can hope for is that some, you know, the disaster does not strike before they and the Democrats can be held responsible for the worst presidential administration in history. I don't know that that's going to happen, because this is the time for our enemies to act, and I promise you they are emboldened. Tucker Carlson has some thoughts on this, and it's going to be a bit of a Tucker night, because he plays heavily into my thoughts on political theater, as does what we're talking about here. Come on, Tuck, where in the hell are you? Okay. Going to sound crazy. And I don't think I have it listed. Oh, my God, do I not? son of a... Okay, let me check one more place. I thought I had this. I was pretty sure I had this. It was the last clip I uploaded, or so I thought. Ah, yep. A little on the long side. Doesn't matter. We got 2 hours to kill. Tucker Carlson from, I think, Thursday night or Friday night. Get a load of this.
Good evening and welcome to Tucker Carlson Tonight. Not trying to be cruel this Wednesday, just reading the numbers. Joe Biden is the most unpopular president that the United States has had in a very long time. And voters dislike Kamala Harris even more. And that's a problem because this is supposed to be the new administration's honeymoon period, the part where everyone thinks they're great. So it's not getting better from here. This is as beloved as the Biden administration is going to get. Smart Democrats can read the numbers. They understand this, and they're working on a solution. This week, two of them wrote a piece in the Wall Street Journal calling on the party to support Hillary Clinton for president in 2024. Hillary is the best-positioned candidate to win a national election, they argued. She's also, they noted, younger than Joe Biden. Former President Bill Clinton agrees with this, or says he does anyway. Bill Clinton told People magazine that his wife is, quote, the most qualified person to run for office in my lifetime, including me. In fact, failing to elect Hillary in 2016 was, in Bill Clinton's studied estimation, an historic national tragedy, quote, one of the most profound mistakes we've ever made. Unforgivable, really. The good news is we now have a chance to correct that mistake, and you don't get those very often in life. Typically, when you do something rash or stupid, you've got to live with the consequences. It's probably happened to you. One night you're listening to Born to Run after too many drinks. The next thing you know, you've got Bruce Springsteen's face tattooed on your lower back. It's embarrassing. It's also permanent. Think of Hillary Clinton as America's national tattoo remover. She alone can erase the stain of our youthful bad judgment. God bless that woman. But wait a second, you say. Hillary can't win. She's yesterday's candidate. This country's got a short attention span. We want the new thing. And Hillary Clinton isn't new. She's been around forever. We're bored of her. Well, if you believe that, you don't remember Hillary Clinton very well. Call her what you will, but she's not boring. Hillary's like a box of Cracker Jacks or your emotionally volatile niece who goes to art school. She's full of surprises. You never know what you're going to get. There are days when Hillary seems like a sensible Midwestern Methodist who grew up Republican in a suburb outside Chicago. That's the biographically accurate Hillary Clinton. But it's hardly the only Hillary Clinton. During the year she spent in Arkansas, for example, Hillary often played the loyal daughter of the American South, a Southern fried Dixie lady with a spunky feminist twist. That was the character she was portraying when we first met her 30 years ago this month. It was during the 1992 presidential primaries. Listen to her accent here.
You're looking at two people who love each other. This is not an arrangement or an understanding. This is a marriage. That's a very different thing.
You know, I'm not sitting here as some little woman standing by my man like Tammy Wynette. I'm sitting here because I love him, and I respect him, and I honor what he's been through and what we've been through together.
You don't hear a hint of Parkridge, Illinois in that voice. It's all bourbon and okra. Pretty impressive. But that's hardly the only persona in Hillary's quiver. She contains multitudes. When she feels like it, Hillary can transform herself entirely from a middle-aged, rich white lady to a weary but dignified household domestic-turned-civil rights protester, bruised and battered from a harrowing march across the Edmund Pettus Bridge on the road to freedom. Sometimes Hillary Clinton is just sick and tired of being sick and tired.
I don't feel no ways tired. I come too far from where I started from. Nobody told me that the road would be easy. I don't believe he brought me this far to leave me.
It's not a bad impression. Of course, there are other days when Hillary doesn't talk at all. That's in her repertoire, too. She just points her finger at you and cackles wildly like a mental patient on the subway. For the uninitiated, it can be a disconcerting experience. Is she casting a spell? Is she going to bite me? You're never sure. But her staff isn't worried. They think it's all part of her secret sauce. It's one of the reasons everyone loves Hillary. Here's the cackle routine.
Wouldn't it be insane of you to run for office again?
Is she sitting across from me right now?
Well, I don't know why that's funny. I mean, did you have any in-person briefings? I don't find it funny at all.
How did you kill Jeffrey Epstein?
It is great to have you here.
All right, I'm going to tell you how you really get
out your damn email. But there are a lot of people who are not.
Well.
Including.
I mean, really, yes, it deserves a lot of laughter.
No, she didn't kill Jeffrey Epstein. Remember all that? You're starting to see how the Hillary Clinton phenomenon began in the first place and why it could so easily rekindle. Hillary's political career was always a grassroots movement, a prairie fire, if you will. She had famously broad support from top DNC officials to several billionaire Democratic donors. Ron Burkle came out for Hillary. That's like winning every voter in the state of Ohio, at least from a fundraising perspective. So clearly she's got the mechanics down. How about the issues? What's Hillary going to run on? Come on, think about it. Libya. She's going to run on what she did in the North African nation of Libya. It's the one achievement of her life that's uniquely hers. Her husband had nothing to do with it. As Secretary of State under Obama, Hillary Clinton ordered the killing of Muammar Gaddafi. He was the bloodthirsty Libyan strongman who was also, let's be honest, creepy and weird and therefore deserving of death. Hillary had him offed. Then she laughed about it. Watch.
That is the land of unconfirmed witness.
We came. We saw. He died.
He didn't have anything to do with your visit.
No, I'm sure it did.
We came, we saw, he died. Pretty funny. But then what happened? Once Hillary killed the leader of the country, how'd the country do? Well, let's see. We'll tell the story in pictures. Here's the capital of Libya before Hillary Clinton decided to introduce the Libyan people to a little thing we call human rights. The city looks fine. But underneath, there was no freedom. There were too few Soros-backed NGOs. She changed that. Now, here's that same city, post-Hillary. Those people in the foreground are African slaves. They're being sold as property in the now thriving slave markets in downtown Tripoli. No, they don't look very happy, that's true. But at least Gaddafi's gone, so on some level, they're free. They've been liberated by Hillary Clinton, despite the fact they're now enslaved. That's called progress. It's worth something. In fact, it's a pretty good campaign slogan. Hillary 2024. She'll do for us what she did for Libya. You can imagine the posters and T-shirts and coffee mugs. Somebody's going to need to get those slaves to sign a consent form. Put that on the list. But all of a sudden, Hillary Clinton for president is starting to sound a little less crazy, isn't it? In fact, it's starting to sound inevitable. There are really just two questions left to answer. Why did Hillary lose last time, and who would she run against 2 years from now? Let's take the first question first. It's got the simplest, most obvious answer. Hillary Clinton was cheated out of her rightful destiny in 2016 because unseen forces of evil worked furiously to undermine her because they feared her strength and goodness. Come on. You knew that. Hillary Clinton certainly knows that. Watch.
The Russians, let's say WikiLeaks, same thing, dumped the John Podesta emails. I have my complaints about former Director Comey. The use of my email account was turned into, you know, the biggest scandal since Lord knows when. They covered it like it was Pearl Harbor. If you look at Facebook, the vast majority of the news items posted were fake. There's all these stories about, you know, guys over in Macedonia who are running these fake news sites. I inherit nothing from the Democratic Party. I also think I was the victim of a very broad assumption I was going to win.
You know, if the election had been on October 27th, I'd be your president. And it wasn't. It was on October 28th, and there was just a lot of funny business going on around that.
So the Russians, WikiLeaks, Jim Comey, Facebook, Democratic Party saboteurs, and the citizenry of Macedonia. Those are the people who did the funny business that was like Pearl Harbor that prevented Hillary from becoming president. That's who opposed her last time, obviously. Who's going to oppose her this time? Well, for the answer to that question, we turn, as we always do, to Mr. Tom Friedman of the New York Times, who is both a Pulitzer Prize winner and a certified moron. In that paradoxical way that's familiar to Washingtonians, Tom Friedman is just dumb enough to get a lot of things right. If Tom Friedman thinks it, chances are a lot of other self-important mediocrities think it too, and those are the people who run this country. Yesterday, Tom Friedman wrote a piece calling on Joe Biden to replace Kamala Harris with Liz Cheney in the next election. Now, if you're not Tom Friedman or his friends, this might strike you as ridiculous. In fact, it might seem like yet another sign that our political class has reached peak decadence and exhaustion. If they're pushing a Cheney in the next presidential cycle, maybe they've run out of ideas. Well, of course they have. And that's exactly what gives Hillary such a natural opening here. As long as we're turning our politics into a 1990s sitcom reunion, why not get George W. Bush to run? That's not a crazy idea. He's got the time to do it. At this stage, Bush would much rather run with Hillary than against Hillary. They're personal friends. On most things, they agree vehemently. But having a Bush and a Clinton on the same ticket wouldn't work. It's just too obvious. Maybe W could be convinced to take one for the establishment and throw on the Republican jersey one last time. He's 75, but that is a full presidential term younger than Joe Biden, which by current standards qualifies as fresh new leadership. George W., 2024, time to give the younger generation a chance. It might work, or not, just spitballing here. Either way, it is way past time to get Hillary back into the White House. The lady's got a speech to give. She wrote it 5 years ago for her inevitable inauguration, thanks to the Macedonians that didn't happen. But she never threw it away. She still got the speech. Last month, she read a portion of it on NBC News. Watch.
I dream of going up to her and sitting down next to her, taking her in my arms and saying, look at me. Listen to me. You will survive. You will have a good family of your own and three children. And as hard as it might be to imagine, your daughter will grow up and become the president of the United States.
Who's she crying for? Herself. In case you're confused by the context there, that was Hillary telling her deceased mother that everything's going to be okay because Hillary has been elected president of the United States. No more tears, no more anxiety, we're going to make it. We've got a woman in the White House. A lot's happened since Hillary Clinton wrote those words. It's a different country now than it was 5 years ago. But Hillary Clinton hasn't changed. Her primary interests remain exactly what they always were. She's still talking with endless and undimmed enthusiasm about herself. We don't know what's in the rest of her victory speech. We're going to have to wait until January of 2025 to find out. But one thing we can safely assume, it ends with a cackle and a finger. Hey, Sean Hannity here. Hey, click here to subscribe to Fox News YouTube page and catch our hottest interviews and most compelling analysis. You will not get it anywhere else.
Oh, my God. I thought I had that clipped off. Sorry. Anyway, what do you think? Is it possible? I mean, that, yeah, if she's alive, she'll run. If she, you know, if she even thinks she's got a chance. And she's testing the waters now. I think a lot of what Tucker said makes perfect sense. But seriously, now, I'm sure that he's looking at this as far as the Democrat base goes. All right, there's enough of us out here. You know, we know how dislikable she is. We know how dishonest she is. We know the problems. And yeah, are they going to try and sell it? Sure, they're going to try and sell it just like they did last time, just like they did the time before that. Will they sell it? No. No, by God, they're not going to sell it. They're not going to come even close. But she's going to try. And she's going to have money behind her. She always does. And will it work? I guess a lot of that depends on what kind of shape Joe Biden is when it comes time to start campaigning. And that's, you know, going to start. He's got a year. He's got another year. And then sometime along about the spring of 2023 or so, spring or summer 2023, he's going to have to get out there. He's going to have to get out there, and it's going to start. Hillary's already started. This is the problem. This is one of the problems with American politics as it exists now, is, you know, we're running into these dynastic candidates, and we don't need them. You know, you saw it with the Kennedys. You know, they were always up in the levers of power. You saw it with the Bushes. We've seen it with the Clintons. And until these people die off, I don't know how it stops. I really don't. I mean, and there are people that would take Hillary Clinton, even in the shape she's in now, they would take her seriously when it comes to campaigning. Totally. Totally. So personally, I don't think she stands a rat's ass chance. And of course, then again, you know, this election might have been a test run to make sure that she gets in next time. Now that they apparently have the systems down and understand exactly what's needed to make it happen, maybe Biden was just blazing the trail for Hillary. I don't know. Well, we're past the bottom of the hour, so we're going to take a little musical break. We will be back with more of a conservative's perspective here on Patriot Nation Radio at Blog Talk Radio right after this.
again. Your touch has thrilled me like the rush of the wind, and your arms have held me safe from a rolling sea. There's always been a quiet place to harbor you and me.
Our love is like a ship on the ocean. That flows from you. Don't let me drift away, my dear, when love can see me through.
Our love is like a ship on the ocean. We've been sailing with a cargo full of love and devotion. So I'd like to know where you got the notion.
Oh, man. A lot of rock in there. Rocking the baby, rocking the boats, rock and roll. And, you know, and a lot of people I know, and I've seen it happen. I watch it on the switchboard. You know, people call in to listen, which, by the way, thank you. And new listeners, welcome. If there are any, it's nice to have you with us. We're really glad that you tuned in. And I'll, you know, at the bottom of the hour, you know, top of the hour, I take a break every 30 minutes because, quite frankly, all this talking makes a guy thirsty. And I can get something to drink. I can listen to music. And I'm also, you know, so I'm a frustrated news and commentary guy, which is what I get to do. But I'm also like a frustrated good time rock and roll 60s psychedelic plastic banana DJ. And so I get to do both. I get to do all this. And so my apologies. I like to play music, too. Excuse me, I'm going to have to hit the mute button in just a moment. And we're back. A conservative perspective here on Patriot Nation Radio at blogtalkradio.com. We do this live twice a week, Tuesdays, Thursdays, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We have a recorded version of the program, 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on Sundays on the Mojo 50 Radio Network, mojo50.com, if you're not listening. You ought to be. The very best in libertarian and conservative talk radio, mojo50.com. Okay, back to the premise. We're going to continue now. Some more of the theater. And I think that a lot of what goes on is theater. What we're seeing in these folks trying to pass Joe Biden and Kamala Harris off as responsible America-loving politicians who are motivated truly to do what's best for the American people is not working. It's just not going to happen. That is bad theater. And no matter how much lipstick they put on either one of those respective pigs, there's still a couple of pigs. There's nothing else to it. There's not any material for silk purses in either one of those. But there's more theater to it than that. In another branch of the theater, and I can't remember who it was that said, it might have been Lee Atwater, somebody in Texas, made the comment that politics, particularly national politics, Washington politics, is show business for ugly people. And they're exactly right, because of all these big bills and all this news and the way they, you know, they package it up. Everything is so earth-shattering and important and all moving. And, you know, these guys have reporters and correspondents circling around them and cameras going off and microphones and blah, 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 yaggity-shaggity. And in a way, he's right. But last week, and actually a little bit before that, some remarkable theater took place concerning Ted Cruz. I'm not exactly sure how this works, and I'm going to let you guys listen and be the judge of it. There's a little bit of Tucker in here again. And when it and Tucker plays his role in the theater, all these guys do. We all do. You know, he's not an active participant. He is the sage upon the stage, and he walks over, in between the acts and breaks down what's going on, and he, like a narrator would. And I kind of like to think that's why. But anyway, here, let me set this up. This is Ted Cruz, and he's testifying about the events that took place a year ago on January 6th, the insurrection. The invasion of the Capitol, the revolution, the domestic terrorists. Right. Okay. Here we go. This is what he said. Maybe.
We are approaching a solemn anniversary this week, and it is an anniversary of a violent terrorist attack on the Capitol, where we saw the men and women of law enforcement demonstrate incredible courage, incredible bravery, risk their lives to defend the men and women who serve in this Capitol. We are grateful for that courage. We appreciate the selfless sacrifice of the men and women who keep us safe. And I will say, my view is that anyone who commits an act of violence should be prosecuted. And anyone who assaults a law enforcement officer should go to jail for a very long time. And I think that's a principle that is true regardless of the politics of the violent criminal, whether they are right wing, left wing, or they got no wings at all. If you assault a cop, you ought to go to jail for a long, long time. And I hope we get some agreement that that should be true regardless of the political context that ostensibly and purportedly justifies that violence, that we will stand with the men and women of blue.
Okay. Tucker Carlson had, I hope this is the right clip, Tim, I hope it is, had this to say about what Ted Cruz just said.
Conservative Republican senators. What are they busy doing? Well, they're busy repeating the talking points that Merrick Garland has written for them. Here's one example.
We are approaching a solemn anniversary this week, and it is an anniversary of a violent terrorist attack on the Capitol, where we saw the men and women of law enforcement demonstrate incredible courage, incredible bravery, risk their lives to defend the men and women who serve in this Capitol.
Now, let's be honest. Everyone who's conservative appreciates Ted Cruz. You may not like him, but you've got to appreciate him. He's legitimately smart. He's one of the more articulate people to serve in the Congress, maybe the most articulate. He doesn't use a single word by accident. Every word Ted Cruz uses is used intentionally. He's a lawyer. He described January 6th as a violent terrorist attack. Of all the things that January 6th was, it was definitely not a violent terrorist attack. It wasn't an insurrection. Was it a riot? Sure. It was not a violent terrorist attack. Sorry. So why are you telling us that it was, Ted Cruz? And why are none of your Republican friends who are supposed to be representing us and all the people who have been arrested during this purge saying anything? What the hell's going on here? You're making us think maybe the Republican Party is as worthless as we suspected it was. That can't be true. Reassure us, please, Ted Cruz.
Now, Cruz catches wind of this. And shortly after that segment aired, Ted texts, excuse me, got to hit the mute button again. And we're back. So shortly after this segment airs with Tucker Carlson, Ted Cruz has texted him. And he wants to come on the show. He wants to get this straightened out. Because Ted Cruz knows he screwed the pooch. So here's what happens on the very next night when he goes on to Tucker's show to try and plead his case. And we're going to give credit to Tucker. No breaks were given.
I played this tape for you last night. We were surprised by it. We prefaced it by saying every conservative appreciates Ted Cruz because he's one of the smartest and most articulate people in the Congress, and he's conservative. But he referred publicly to what happened on January 6th as, quote, a violent terror attack. Here it is.
We are approaching a solemn anniversary this week, and it is an anniversary of a violent terrorist attack on the Capitol, where we saw the men and women of law enforcement demonstrate incredible courage, incredible bravery, risk their lives to defend the men and women who serve in this Capitol.
Senator Cruz was game enough to come on tonight. We appreciate that. He joins us now. Senator, thanks so much for coming on. So I guess I mean, there are a lot of dumb people in the Congress. You're not one of them. I think you're smarter than I am. And you never use words carelessly. And yet you called this a terror attack when by no definition was it a terror attack. That's a lie. You told that lie on purpose, and I'm wondering why you did.
Well, Tucker, thank you for having me on. When you aired your episode last night, I sent you a text shortly thereafter and said, listen, I'd like to go on because the way I phrased things yesterday, it was sloppy and it was frankly dumb. And
I don't buy that. Whoa. I don't buy that part. Look, I've known you a long time since before you went to the Senate. You're a Supreme Court contender. You take words as seriously as any man who's ever served in the Senate. And every word, you repeated that phrase. I do not believe that you used that accidentally. I just don't.
So, Tucker, as a result of my sloppy phrasing, it's caused a lot of people to misunderstand what I meant. Let me tell you what I meant to say. What I was referring to are the limited number of people who engaged in violent attacks against police officers. Now, I think you and I both agree that if you assault a police officer, you should go to jail. That's who I was talking about. And the reason the phrasing was sloppy is I have talked dozens, if not hundreds of times. I've drawn a distinction. I wasn't saying that the thousands of peaceful protesters supporting Donald Trump are somehow terrorists. I wasn't saying the millions of patriots across the country supporting President Trump are terrorists. And that's what a lot of people have misunderstood
that
comment.
Wait a second, hold on. What you just said doesn't make sense. So if somebody assaults a cop, he should be charged and go to jail. I couldn't agree more. We have said that for years. But that person's still not a terrorist. How many people have been charged with terrorism on January 6th? Like, why'd you use that word? You're playing into the other side's characterization that, as Joe Kent just explained, allows them to define an entire population as foreign combatants. And you know that. So why'd you do it?
So, Tucker, let me answer you directly. The reason I use that word, for a decade, I have referred to people who violently assault police officers as terrorists. I've done so over and over and over again. If you look at all the assaults we've seen across the country, I've called that terrorism over and over again. That being said, Tucker, I agree with you. It was a mistake to say that yesterday, and the reason is what you just said, which is we've now had a year of Democrats in the media twisting words and trying to say that all of us are terrorists, trying to say you're a terrorist, I'm a terrorist. And so, look, I don't like people who assault cops, stand up and defend cops. And the reason I use that word is that's the word I've always used for people that violently attack cops. But in this context, I get why people were angry, because we've had a year of the corrupt corporate media and Democrats claiming anyone who objected to the election fraud. And by the way, remember what was happening during
protests? Can I just ask, hold on, you work in the Senate? I guess I just don't believe you. And I mean that with respect, because I have such respect
for your acuity and your precision. And I've seen it on display. I've covered you as a reporter. I know how you speak. And you have sat there for a year and watched people use language to distort the events of that day. Intentionally. Insurrection. Coup.
And of course it
terrorism.
Was an insurrection.
Saying it's an insurrection is a political term. It's a lie. I've repeatedly denounced it. And when it comes to, look, I was focusing on what I normally say. That what you aired was a little 15-second snippet. What I normally say is violence is wrong, peaceful protest is right. If you engage in violence, you should be prosecuted. If you're speaking, you have a right to speak. I say that all the time.
Well, I
meant
and I
say
agree.
In that snippet.
So who's Ray Epps, by the way, since you are a senator? Like, he and this other guy are clearly encouraging the crowd to commit crimes. Neither one has been arrested or charged. What is that, do you think?
So I think that is a very good question. I don't know who Ray Epps is. I've seen that video multiple times. It's disturbing.
Right?
He's clearly urging the crowd to violate the law. When you see the crowd start chanting, Fed, 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 for him to appear on the FBI's most wanted list and come off, it certainly suggests he was working for the FBI. That's not conclusive, but that's the obvious implication. And the Attorney General and the Department of Justice won't answer the question. Tucker, I can tell you, I joined with a number of other senators trying to get the Biden DOJ to answer the question why so many January 6 prisoners are in solitary confinement, why they're being treated so much worse than the Antifa rioters and the people who committed firebombing and a year of riots across the country. And this Biden DOJ won't go after them. But let me also make a quick point, Tucker. Remember, while thousands of people were standing up to defend this country on January 6th, at that exact moment, I was standing on the Senate floor objecting to the election results, demanding that we impanel an election commission to consider evidence of voter fraud. And I brought together 11 senators to join me in supporting getting to the bottom of that. So, of course, it would be ridiculous for me to be saying that the people standing up and protesting to follow the law were somehow terrorists. I was talking about people who commit violence against cops. And you and I both agree, if you commit violence against cops, you should go to jail.
Yeah, but you're not a terrorist. You know? You're not. You're a guy who assaulted a cop. Okay, so there's a legal difference, as you well know, better than I do, since you were actually in the running for the Supreme Court. And there's a moral difference between a guy,
Tucker,
you know,
the reason I use that word is for a decade I've used that word for people that violently assault cops. I used that word all in 2020 for the Antifa and BLM terrorists that assaulted cops and firebombed police cars. But I agree, it was a mistake to use the word yesterday because the Democrats and the corporate media have so politicized it. They're trying to paint everyone as a terrorist, and it's a lie.
Exactly.
And by the way, I've spoken out vocally against your exchange you just had. They want to paint us as Nazis. Yes.
That was scary.
That is what they're trying to do. And I just, look, I'm the one leading the fight in the Senate against this garbage. And it's what I have been doing, and it's what I'll continue doing.
Well, I appreciate your coming on tonight. Thank you very much, Senator Ted Cruz of Texas.
Okay. I'm not exactly sure about you. He didn't pass. This tarnished him to me. Now, here's where we get to the theater part. He says what he says. Then he tries to explain it. And he doesn't do a very good job of explaining it. And kudos to Tucker Carlson, if nothing else, because, you know, I just don't believe you. All due respect, but I just don't believe you. I think you said what you said. And now, you know, you can't walk it back. You're trying to walk it back, and it's not working. Even with as erudite and articulate fellow as Ted Cruz is. And he is remarkably articulate. Now, let's fast forward about 2 days, 3 days from when this happened with Tucker Carlson. Now, he's on the Senate floor, and he is talking with some people from the FBI and the Department of Justice about what happened on January 6th.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Olson, how many people have been charged with crimes of violence in connection with the events on January 6th?
Senator, I'm not sure exactly how many have been charged with crimes of violence. I know that there are many.
Okay. How many have been charged with nonviolent crimes?
I don't have the numbers of people charged, whether at the state or federal level. I know that
Okay. How many people are currently incarcerated concerning the events of January 6th?
I don't know the number of people incarcerated. Again, I know that
let me ask you that. Look, we have limited time, so I don't want you to filibuster. You either know the answer or you don't. How many people have been placed in solitary confinement concerning the events of January 6th?
I don't have any information about that, Senator.
You know, Mr. Olson, I will say it was sad. Senator Lee just asked you about this. Back in June of 2021, Senator Lee and I and two other senators sent a letter to the Department of Justice asking these questions, asking about the differential prosecutions. Let me ask you, during 2020, Black Lives Matter and Antifa riots all across the country, there were over 700 police officers injured by Black Lives Matter and Antifa riots. How many people have been charged with crimes of violence concerning those riots all across the country?
I don't have information on how many. I would say, you know, hundreds of people.
You would say, but you don't know. You know, when we asked you why the Biden Department of Justice has such wildly disparate standards, going after January 6th, targeting some people who committed crimes of violence, and anyone who commits a crime of violence should be prosecuted, but also targeting a lot of nonviolent individuals, we asked you why is it that you won't target the rioters and terrorists who firebomb cities across this country? The answer we got from the Department of Justice was shameful. On October 22nd, you came back and said, quote, "The department has dedicated investigative and prosecutorial resources commensurate with the significance of these events. By significance, I guess it means the political benefit to the Biden White House. And I will tell you, there are a great many Americans who are understandably deeply concerned about the politicization of the Department of Justice under President Joe Biden. It has been 218 days since we sent you that letter. DOJ refused to answer the letter. Today, when Senator Lee and I asked you about it, your answer to every damn question is, I don't know, I don't know, I don't know. You're under oath. You may believe at the Department of Justice that you are unaccountable to the American people, but that is not the case, and the wildly disparate standards are unacceptable. Ms. Sandberg, I want to turn to the FBI. How many FBI agents or confidential informants actively participated in the events of January 6th?
Sir, I'm sure you can appreciate that I can't go into the specifics of sources and methods.
Did any FBI agents or confidential informants actively participate in the events of January 6th, yes or no?
Sir, I can't answer that.
Did any FBI agents or confidential informants commit crimes of violence on January 6th?
I can't answer that, sir.
Did any FBI agents or FBI informants actively encourage and incite crimes of violence on January 6th?
Sir, I can't answer that.
Ms. Sadburn, who is Ray Epps?
I'm aware of the individual, sir. I don't have the specific background to him.
Well, there are a lot of people who are understandably very concerned about Mr. Epps. On the night of January 5th, 2021, Epps wandered around the crowd that had gathered, and there's video out there of him chanting, "Tomorrow, we need to get into the Capitol, into the Capitol." This was strange behavior, so strange that the crowd began chanting, "Fed, Fed, 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 Fed." Ms. Sandburn, was Ray Epps a Fed?
Sir, I cannot answer that question.
The next day, on January 6th, Mr. Epps is seen whispering to a person, and 5 seconds later, 5 seconds after he's whispering to a person, that same person begins to forcibly tear down the barricades. Did Mr. Epps urge them to tear down the barricades?
Similar to the other answers, I cannot answer that.
Shortly thereafter, the FBI put out a public post listing, seeking information on individuals connected with violent crimes on January 6th. Among those individuals, in the bottom there, is Mr. Epps. The FBI publicly asked for information, identifying, offering cash rewards leading to information, leading to the arrest. This was posted, and then, sometime later, magically, Mr. Epps disappeared from the public posting. According to public records, Mr. Epps has not been charged with anything. No one's explained why a person videoed urging people to go to the Capitol, a person whose conduct was so suspect the crowd believed he was a Fed, would magically disappear from the list of people the FBI was looking at. Ms. Sanborn, a lot of Americans are concerned that the federal government deliberately encouraged illegal and violent conduct on January 6th. My question to you, and this is not an ordinary law enforcement question, this is a question of public accountability. Did federal agents or those in service of federal agent actively encourage violent and criminal conduct on January 6th?
Not to my knowledge, sir.
Thank you.
When I hear this, and he certainly sounded fierce. He was going right after him. Sir, I can't answer that question. Is really translates to me into, sir, I won't answer that question. Now, it's a safe bet Ted Cruz knew. I mean, you know, it's a pretty stupid lawyer that asks questions that they don't already have the answer to, and I'm sure Ted Cruz is no exception. He knew these guys were going to come up here and dummy up. That's what they do. They come in, they get the mid-level guys to go up there on Capitol Hill, and Ted Cruz and the people, you know, on the committees beat on them. The Democrats are going to give them a break. The Republicans are going to wear them out, and they're going to go up there, and they're going to take their shots, and they're going to get beat on, and then they're going to leave. And there's not going to be any real answers other than what we can get by reading between the lines. And I really don't know what to make of all this. He says what he says about, you know, and he made a blanket statement, whether he admits he made a blanket statement or doesn't admit he made a blanket statement or tries to qualify it however he wants to. He said what he said. I don't know what the motivations behind it were, but he said what he said. And I think not only having said what he did, the way that he tried to justify it on Tucker Carlson the very next night didn't do him any good. And I think that he probably destroyed a number of potential short-term political aspirations. So he says what he says, domestic terrorists, blah, 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 yakety schmackety. So then these stooges, these rubes from the FBI and Department of Justice come up here to be used as heavy bags, and he wears them out. I mean, that's classic Ted Cruz. He goes after you. He doesn't let up, and he doesn't let up till he either gets the truth or he makes you look like a fool for sandbagging and dip, dodge, dive, ducking, and dodging. Did it do him any good? No, I don't think so. But do you see what I mean? All this theater. Okay, that was a sop to his base. He went after these guys and got tough on them to just reassure his voters that, hey, yeah, it's me, and I'm really on your side. Don't worry about that stuff I said about you guys being domestic terrorists. Watch how I go after these dudes in the FBI and the DOJ. Almost like, you know, I was talking with Gary Benford today, my friend in New York. United Patriots Uprising, it's taken off. It's on all the platforms. It's everywhere out there, and you need to check it out because it is slam bang. We were talking today, and it's like pro wrestling. And in pro wrestling, you have heroes and villains, or, as they're called in the business, faces and heels. And, you know, they kind of interchange back and forth. A guy might start out as a heel and wind up as a face. My God. That's easy for me to say, so don't you kids try that at home. I do it, you know, regularly. So what were we talking about? Oh, we were talking about faces and heels in wrestling. You know, a heel might wind up ultimately being a face, and a face, you know, starts out hot, and then something happens, and he turns into a heel. And it's just all part of the story. All right? And it's terrific, and it's enthralling, because there's action, there's this, there's that, but it's just theater. It's just theater. I mean, in the case of pro wrestling, it's a remarkably physical theater, but it's theater nonetheless. And what we've heard from Ted Cruz in the last couple of weeks, I think is theater as well. And again, I don't know what to make of it. I don't know if, I just don't know. And it's kind of like Tucker Carlson says, you know, you may not like Ted Cruz as a conservative, but you certainly have to appreciate him. And you do, because he's a pretty serious intellect. And again, you saw what he did. And what he did was pure Cruz. He was relentless. He was unstoppable. And he's either going to get the truth out of you, or he's going to make you look like a fool by consistently denying it in the face of overwhelming evidence. I think what we're going to do right now is we're going to take a little break. We will be back with more of Conservative's Perspective right after this. Thank you. Thank you very much. Yeah. Tell you what, when he was not in that, like, booze and barbiturates, feeling sorry for himself because Priscilla was divorcing him just because he was banging every chick in Hollywood when he was out there making movies in Vegas. Yeah, okay, yeah, I hated that. This Elvis, the jacked up on Benzedrine, and get going, baby. That's the Elvis that I like to hear about. And we're back. Let's get back on this cruise thing for just a second before we move on to something else. I don't know what that's going to be. What are we to make of this? His explanation there towards the end of the thing with Tucker Carlson, to me, got a little desperate. He seemed frustrated that Tucker wasn't buying his story, and I don't buy his story, and I'm not exactly sure what that means beyond I just don't believe him. Is it possible that he misspoke? Yeah, it's possible, I guess. I look at it for the reasons that we've always talked about, you know, the reason we've already talked about, and that Tucker Carlson pointed out as well. The guy doesn't say anything unintentionally. Every word that comes out of his mouth, intent. Okay, it's not accidental. It's not, you know, poorly paraphrased. It's thought out, and it's intentional. And if that's the case, then that's got to be something that he believes, something that he's convincing others that he wants them to believe. I don't know. I don't know. And then we listen to what he did in busting the chops on the FBI and the DOJ people who didn't have any answers for him. But again, he knew they weren't going to have any answers for him. Not dead air. I'm trying not to yawn. I guess I'm boring myself. maybe we'll just go ahead and wrap this up. But where do we go with this? What are we to make of Ted Cruz? Is he someone who can be relied upon? We look at his background. I think overall, yeah, probably. But then again, like I said, his explanation and how he tried to spin this away when he was on Tucker Carlson, I just didn't buy. I still don't buy after having heard it again. I played it as a clip on the Sunday program and haven't heard it. You know, he didn't sell anybody, I don't think. And I think perhaps, you know, he might have been gunning for a certain level of redemption when he went after these fools last week from the FBI and Department of Justice. The Supreme Court knocks down the vaccine mandate. Build Back Better is just dead, man. It's just straight up dead. That was going to be, you know, like his signature legislation, his legacy, if you will. And it's not going to happen. They keep on insisting that they're going to kill the filibuster, and I don't think that's going to happen either. So in 1 week, well, in the span of 2 weeks, if we look at it, Build Back Better, dead on arrival. The Supreme Court says nix to the jab mandate. They're not going to kill the filibuster. He goes down to Atlanta where they have the least restrictive voting laws in terms of making it convenient for the voter, the registered voter, to vote, I think, of anywhere in the country. Far more lenient than Joe Biden's home state of Delaware. But he goes down there and he tells these guys, if you're not on for our voting legislative bills and the voter integrity laws that we're proposing, Well, then you racist bastards, you're no better than Bull Connor or George Wallace or Vinton Maddox. I mean, Lester Maddox. Vinton Maddox. I think he was a baseball player. Lester Maddox. Okay, and that's what he's saying. Now, what he's doing when he says this, you know, and the Republicans, you know, we expect that. Conservatives expect that because that's – but here's the problem. He's also lumping a lot of moderate Democrats who legitimately, just like Republicans, he's lumping them in the same thing, and they don't like that. And the independent voters with the same legitimate concerns about federalizing the elections and cheat by mail and making it so much easier for Democrats to win all the time because they love cheating and they're obviously pretty good at it. Case in point, John Kennedy and Joe Biden. It's going to have repercussions. There's going to be a pushback on this for them. They don't see it. I'm happy they don't see it. I'm just calling it the way I see it. And they're alienating. God almighty. They're alienating everybody. And it's no joke. Hispanics have turned against Biden, and his approval rating amongst Hispanics is in the basement. They're turning from, and have been for a number of years now, slowly but steadily here lately, from Democrat politics to conservative politics. The entire country has jumped in favor of Republicans and conservatism by 14 points in the last year because of what this idiot's doing in the White House. A lot of this stuff is going to take decades, in all likelihood, to untangle once we get him out of there. And I feel confident that we will. Is it going to be Donald Trump? I don't know. Should it be Donald Trump? Better question to ask. Really, and I'm not being mean here. I voted for the guy twice, and there's so much of the things that he said and done, did rather, that resonated so positively with me. Not dead air. I'm just thinking about how this whole thing is going to shake out. Now, coming up in the midterm elections, as I said earlier in the program, 26 Democrats at this point have said, nah, no mas. No mas, mi amigo. And they're going back to the rancho. Now, there will be Democrats, you know, they have a roster and they have a little bit of depth to it. But I don't think it's going to work in every single case. So they may get some Democrats back in out of that 26. But I think the majority of them, you know, they're going to go Republican. They're going to lose these elections. And that's going to give overwhelming control to the Republicans in the House and the Senate. Now, what will they do with that? That's where things get shaky. And that's where we really got to worry. If they were true to themselves and their ideals and their constituency, they would stop this administration dead in its tracks. And it would go about the laborious process of undoing all the damage this idiot has done. Now, and we're back. Sorry about that. Because a lot of what's happening has been done through executive orders. And a Republican president can undo that just as easily because he can sign executive orders countermanding the previous orders. And that's what will happen. So much of this can and hopefully will in the future be avoided by an informed and disseminating electorate. It's the only way we can, it's the only thing that can stop this. We made the mistake, and I think it was a grievous one, of you know, tenuously dealing in good faith with Democrats. But, you know, looking at the last election, look at what they've done. Look at how they've behaved. We can't deal in good faith with these people anymore. Democrat leadership, we just can't. They have to be suppressed. They have to be put down. You want to talk about sedition. You want to talk about an insurrection. Take a look at the Democrat Party. Take a look at Black Lives Matter, a communist organization. Its organizers say they have been classically trained Marxists. It is communism. Antifa, fascism. They say they're anti-fascist. No. They are the fascists, dude. They're totally fascist. And they're Democrats, all right? We can't deal with these people with an olive branch. On the other hand, we're going to have a pistol. I don't like it either. But what alternative do we have? I mean, at some point, there's going to be pushback. There's going to be people get hurt. There's already been a lot of people on our side get hurt. You guys remember the stories about how they were beating up on old folks and throwing eggs and poop and pee in bags at people that were going to Trump rallies. They were walking out from the stadiums and they were, you know, they were getting accosted by these people, and nobody said anything. Nobody did anything about it. Nothing. I don't know why that alarm went off. It's just been one of those nights, man. Okay, well, anyway, it doesn't stop with the midterms. And the midterms, admittedly, like I said, 26 Democrats in the House and Senator Boehner on this deal, that sounds great. That sounds absolutely great. But again, what good is it going to do to lose those 26 Democrats if we wind up with 26 middle of the roaders that, you know, that they're there for them. They're there for themselves. They are their constituency. They're not all going to be Jim Jordans or Mike Lees or Matt Gaetz. And again, you know, some of those Republicans will be replaced with Republicans. Not all, I don't think. I think the majority of that is going to go to Republicans. But again, this comes back to what? A disseminating and informed electorate. We have to bear in mind these people are politicians, right or left, and they will say 9 times out of 10 whatever the hell they need to say to get elected. Now, on the plus side, that means that they're primarily going to have to be fairly well in tune with their constituency in order to know what to say, which leads us to believe that they've probably done a little bit of research on the subjects, just as we have. So what happens? They say the right things. They kiss the right babies. They shake the right hands. They knock on the right rivals, and they wind up in there. And then they kind of lose sight of what they're supposed to do. And it happens. I've said it time and again. Orrin Hatch said it's impossible to go to Washington, D.C. and return an honest man. Harry Truman said it's impossible to get rich in politics if you're honest. And I believe both of those are probably spot on. So what happens? They're not doing what we wanted them to do. And as an informed and disseminating electorate, we have a responsibility. And that responsibility is to remove those guys from office if they're not doing what we want or they're handing us some sob story about why they can't get it done. And then we have to go find someone else, and the vetting process continues. But here's the catch. And we talk, you know, we've talked about term. Well, let's put in term limits. Yeah, great. Term limits is a great idea. How many politicians do you know that are going to vote for term limits to vote themselves out of office, out of that gravy train? Not many. Not enough. Which leads to my next question. Why do we, you know, and on its surface, there are a lot of merits to term limits. I'm not questioning that. However, that having been said, we voted them in, right? We, the people, voted them in. What is it that precludes us from voting them the hell out? Nothing. Nothing at all. Nothing at all. And an informed and disseminating electorate doesn't need term limits. They just don't. Because they're paying attention. Not dead air. Just thinking about the importance of all this that's coming up. Another thing that we need to look at, too, and it's been said before that the midterm elections aren't necessarily sexy elections. In other words, there's no president going to be nominated. We don't have the big campaigns, the slam-bang debates. We don't have any of that. And Democrats historically have a tendency to forget about the midterm elections. It's another thing in our favor. It may be a little different this time. I'm sure they'll be drumming it up. But overall, even with the drumbeats, Democrats have a tendency to stay home in midterms, and that's fine. We can use that to our advantage. Well, I think this is where we're going to go ahead and knock off for the evening. Beautiful snowy day the last couple days here in the Mountain State. Today was beautiful. Yesterday was fantastic. And we're going to take a day off tomorrow, kind of. It's what they call remote learning. So the teachers and the staff and everybody go to the school. The kids stay home, and everything's done on team meetings or Zoom meetings or video. And it's going to be really exciting. Thank you very much for the opportunity to hang out with you and talk about stuff. Like I said, we do it live Tuesdays and Thursdays on Patriot Nation Radio here at Blog Talk Radio. We have a recorded version of the show. Goes out on the... on the Mojo 50 radio network, mojo50.com, the very best in libertarian and conservative talk radio. We'll be back here on Thursday with Mark Hoffman, the handsome one, and Patriot Nation Radio Live. We'll be on from 7 to 8. Then Mark comes in from 8 to 9, and that'll round it up. Oh, tomorrow night, by the way, while I'm thinking of it, tomorrow night, the American Allegiance program with author Kevin White. Top flight guests, compelling topics. This guy's a great radio man, and he's got a terrific program. The American Allegiance program tomorrow night, 7 o'clock, two-hour program, 7 to 9, just like mine is here. I think it's 7. Check him out. Thank you for the opportunity to hang with you. It's been terrific. We'll be back here on Thursday taking a look at things as we do through a conservative perspective. In the meantime, God bless you. And God bless America. Take good care of yourselves. We'll see you then.